Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish, the podcast where you can explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive Jewish lens. I'm Rabbi Richard Jacoby, and it's my pleasure to host this week's episode for the portion of Nitzavim, which covers Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 9, through to the end of chapter 30. Our jumping-off point comes from chapter 30, verse 15, as Moses reaches the climax of his final speech to the people of Israel. Behold, I have this day placed before you life and good, death and evil. And the text will go on to picture Moses imploring the people to choose life. It might not surprise you that although we set out to record a 30-minute discussion, the discussion actually ran somewhat longer, but I hope you will still find it very enjoyable. To explore the topic of human nature and the choices between life and good on the one hand and death and evil on the other are some of the wonderful groups studying Judaism with me in my community. Each has their own different life perspective on human nature, and I'm excited to learn with and from them over the coming 30 minutes. So, as an opening question for each of you, and I'm hoping you'll introduce yourselves before you give your answer, what do you make of Judaism giving human beings the autonomy to choose between life and good and death and evil? And Effie, if I could come to you first, please.
Hi, thanks for having me, Rabbi Richard. So my name's Effie. I am 30 years old, and I'm somewhere in the middle of my journey to become officially Jewish. I originally come from an Ashkenazi background as well as a Middle Eastern background, but I was brought up atheist, so Judaism was never really there. It was only until I started digging into my family history. The work that I do is that I am a positive behavior specialist and rehabilitation into the community specialist, and I work with complex needs and individuals who may appear to be challenging. So for me, Judaism, the stance on human choice, life, death and good, it's a simple answer. It's when God set the design for his creation, there needed to be a counterbalance, and nothing can come from nothing. So good can emerge from and prosper through the evil, even though evil exists. And I think the gift of freedom is simply that, it's a gift. And like a parent, I think Judaism gives us the rules, advice, which are to be followed. And, you know, there are consequences that come with that, with those rules and advice, and I just see it as a chain reaction, and that's what I think Judaism gives us.
Thanks, Effie, for starting us off. And Amanda, I wonder if I could ask you to come in next.
Yeah, sure. So I'm nearing the end of my journey to becoming, I guess, officially Jewish. I think it's 3.5 years now. My experience of religion before coming to Judaism, so I was christened a Methodist, but I have no understanding of it whatsoever. But I was brought up, I guess, in a more kind of Christian background. And that kind of background and that religion has very distinct ideas of good and evil and what is right and what is wrong, and much less freedom. So it's this kind of notion of freedom is one of the things in Judaism that really appeals to me, quite fundamental to how I believe we should live our lives. So without that choice and that freedom to choose, we won't ever question, we won't ever learn. Like Effie said, good can come from evil, because you can learn, and it's all about learning from mistakes. And without a God that forgives, life would just ultimately be too black and white. So it's up to us as individuals to decide and create the world that we want to live in.
Thanks, Amanda. And we're already getting the benefits of the different backgrounds and the different perspectives you're bringing with you. And coming now to Joshua, if I may come to you next, and please do introduce yourself first.
Thank you, Rabbi Richard. I'm Joshua, Jewish via the East End of London, and still here, still thriving, one of the descendants that stayed in the East End. I'm in my mid to late, but I'm sticking with mid for now, 20s, and involved in politics, both in the Jewish community and sort of on the left locally, and have been for some years now. And I think something that resonates with me and the question about human nature and how it relates to Judaism as a belief system and as a religion and as a community is that we don't follow doctrine, we follow guidance. And God has given us free will because God wants to see us strengthened by our ability to make the right choices and to learn from the choices that we've made that are less than right, shall we say. And I think that understanding that we in fact have complete and utter control over what we do, it wasn't and isn't and never is predetermined by anybody else, be it God or any other being, but instead we have the guidance from the Torah, we have the guidance from God, we have the guidance from our rabbis and our community leaders, but ultimately we must take responsibility for those choices. And that, to me, epitomizes that question of human nature, because whatever it is that whatever path it is that we decide to take, be it the good and life on the one hand and the death and evil on the other, you're never fixed on that path. There is always a road to redemption. There is always an opportunity to repent, to right wrongs, and to, as I said, once one has taken responsibility for one's actions, there is a route throughout the Torah and throughout Judaism to make right in this life and not rely on laying that responsibility at somebody else's door, especially God's, because God wants us to be strengthened by taking responsibility for our choices.
Thanks very much, Joshua. And there's also, I think, the other aspect of that, which is, even if we think we're on the path to the life and the good, that we shouldn't become complacent on that journey, because that can drag us towards the other as well. So I think you're highlighting something very useful. Jenny, let me come to you, if I may.
Yeah, thanks, Rabbi Richard. My name's Jenny. I'm 29 years old and I'm a practicing doctor. I grew up in a very religious modern Orthodox family, and actually my view on this is when I was growing up I was taught that good and bad was black and white, what the Torah says is the most important thing and we should follow it to the letter. But as I progressed in my career, I've really noticed that actually I don't believe that at all. I think autonomy is a very difficult way to describe things like good and bad. I think it's very difficult for some people to understand what good is and what bad is, considering their upbringing, and it's just about who you surround yourself by. And yes, it is a choice, but what some people think is good is probably what someone else thinks is bad. So it's very difficult for someone to live as a good person. And yes, there are rules and guidance that the Torah can give us, but at the end of the day, it's really important to understand that people have different backgrounds. It's very difficult for people to see it as a black and white issue. And actually, people grow and go along their lives in very different ways. So that's my take on it.
Thank you, Jenny. And you put me in mind to some of the texts that in the Jewish community across the world we'll be reading next week for Rosh Hashanah, which pictures the situation when Ishmael is out in the wilderness and potentially dying, and God is seen as looking at the child where he is. And the text in the book of Genesis says where he is. And there's that reminder that we always have to be able to try and picture what life is for the person where they are. And in a way, Effie, what you contributed earlier was touching on that in terms of the adults with the different needs and the different triggers that have led to the needs that they have and so on. And Jenny, you've just beautifully touched on that in your answer as well. So thank you for that. Let me see if Peritine, you can add your story and response to this.
Hello. Can everyone hear me? Just checking that my connection hasn't dropped. Okay, so my name's Peritine, 29. I'm currently studying Russian at Queen Mary's University. And I guess I'm on my Jewish journey, like many other people here. And my, I guess, interpretation or understanding of the Jewish idea of, I guess, human nature and good and evil is that whilst all people have their own interpretations and their own understandings of what these things are, there are perhaps more an abstract way, there are fundamental beliefs and ideas that I think not only Jews but all people have or want. You know, there's basic human needs, you know, like nobody wants to go hungry, everybody needs shelter, and I think those are basic fundamental ideas of good. Whether we extend them to other people is another thing. That's a whole other conversation. But I've gone off a little bit of a tangent, I'm sorry. But this sort of conversation got me thinking about in Leviticus 24 with this concept of an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And whilst a lot of people will interpret that to mean, you know, seeking retribution on somebody that's done you wrong, where others see that, and I think both interpretations are true and valid, you know, of making, of compensation, compensating for what that, the wrong that you've done, which I think it's quite nice, and it links into, you know, Yom Kippur just coming up. And I think, I guess the short answer of what I'm trying to say, I'm going on my little waffle, sorry, is that I think the concepts of good and evil are also the, I guess, link into, you know, what you put out into the world, you get back, and there's always that balance. And I think that's, for me, there's a within Judaism, there's a lot about balance, in my opinion, if that makes sense.
thank you Peritine, and that sense of balance is again a very topical one. The idea that someone who potentially goes through a good process of teshuvah at this time of year could be tipping the balance in the scales of the world and saving the world. So we have that amount of individual power in some of the readings of Jewish tradition as well. Peter, let me come to you finally for your thoughts.
Oh, well, yes, I'm Peter. I'm one of the older cohorts, shall we say, of the people on the Access to Judaism course. I'm in my mid-50s, and I've been doing the course now, I think it's approaching 1.5 years almost, coming to the end of it, I think. So what informs me? What is it that I see Judaism and the human being as being? Well, initially, for me, there's a great deal to do with openness, a great deal to do with the ability to search and the freedom to choose and explore possibilities that maybe we haven't thought of before. My own background is in education and academic theology. I I did the whole gamut of degrees, and but inside myself, I kept on searching, I kept on looking, trying to find something that would enable me to not just explore myself, but to explore reality in a greater way and explore what it meant and what it means to interact with people and with God. And that's what Judaism has given me the opportunity to do. It's a way of living, it's a way of searching, a way of seeking, but also it requires a responsibility to be honest about oneself, to be honest about life.
And for all of us, I think that challenge about how we are honest and how we deal with these things is going to be, I think, a recurring theme in this discussion, and we'll go beyond that. We can see in terms of, you know, that choice between good and evil, which posits something, you know, that binary choice, and it's almost as if it is black and white, and yet we know that it's much more nuanced in reality than that. And one of the things that interested me was some of the different settings in which you find yourselves facing choices and decisions that really do confront the delicate nature of what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad. And I wondered if we might explore that with some of you, may not be all of you, we'll see how we go. In terms of perhaps, Jenny, if you're happy to start, as a doctor working within the NHS, some of the choices that doctors face have to be made speedily, and they also have delicate conflicts built into the words or deeds that you are choosing as to which is good and which is evil. Perhaps you could inform us from your medical experience.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Rabbi Richard. So as a doctor, I feel like I've been trained really to do three things, and that's think, do, and say. And in those three things, there are plenty of very difficult decisions in those areas that I have to face pretty much every day. By thinking, I mean, I look through the patient's notes and I very quickly put them into a box, and the box being their illness or the illness I think that they have. And then I'll see the patient. And of course, no patient fits into a box. Everybody is very different. But unfortunately, that's how my mind works, because I've learned that everybody is their illness. So then I will quickly treat that patient as quickly as I can to make them better as quickly as I can. And sometimes it works because I was right, and sometimes it doesn't. And that's where it comes to the crossroads of, do I treat this patient as a human being and look at them as a holistic person with multiple things going on, or do I continue to treat them as that box that I initially put them in? So it's a mental challenge that I constantly have to fight with myself in order to make sure that the patient is treated in the correct way. So that's the thinking aspect. Then the doing aspect. Sometimes I'm on call and I'm faced with multiple patients. They're all equally unwell, but I'd have to make a decision of who I need to see first, who I need to treat first, who do I think is worthy of seeing before somebody else. And me having to make that decision terrifies me even now, and I've been doing it for so many years. Sometimes I'll make the wrong decision and I'll see somebody and the other patient's deteriorated. And then that will really stay with me for months until I, you know, finally get over it and think about, I was under so much pressure and so much stress that I had to make that decision, and actually it's okay. Then the last box of what I do is speaking. Things like breaking bad news, telling a family member that their patient has died, that their mum has died, that their dad has died. And we were always taught that, you know, be really gentle about it. Say things like, your partner's passed away, your mother's passed away. But what I've actually realized is, especially working in such a multicultural area, that if I say things like, your mother's passed away, they won't understand. And they'll think, oh, my mum's having a rest. Great, I'll come back tomorrow. When actually, no, they've died. So over the course of my years of training, I've realized that it's really important to just be dead on, speak the truth, say exactly what's happened. You can be gentle about it, but if you don't say, you have cancer, your mum's died, this is a bad situation, then you're giving the patient and the family members false hope, and that's really unacceptable. And some people look at that and look at me like, oh, that's such an evil way of describing things. That's an evil way of seeing a patient, putting them into that box. That's a horrible thing that you did, that you saw someone over somebody else. But those are the really difficult decisions I have to make every day. And actually, I used to really fret over it and get so upset. But over the time and the course of my training, I've really learned to accept my decisions and, you know, believe in myself a little bit more.
Thank you, Jenny. And that's a very powerful case study of some of the difficulties we have here. And very early on in the pandemic, I was learning with a trauma university specialist lecturer, and we were debating the phrase moral injury. And moral injury is when you are forced to act in ways that offend your own moral code. And so you're compromising your own principles. And you've articulated very beautifully what that is about, and very both beautifully but painfully what that is about. And it is something that we see in so many different walks of life. It was something that the research term came out of research into soldiers, the military, and the positions they're put into. But it does apply here. And over the course of the pandemic, it's applied to a lot of people in different settings. And that's some of the coming to terms with language and actions and what we had to do in a situation that is really important. And here we are in talking about Judaism, and we're using the phrase moral in a non-religious sense, but to describe people's value frameworks and the impact that these things can have on them. So in another setting where, and I wonder if I might come across from the medical to the political, because one aspect, Joshua, of your life is your role in local government. And there, of course, you're having to make decisions about scarce resources and prioritizing one good cause over another good cause and so on. And I wonder if how those have impacted on your sense of the good and the evil, the right and the wrong, and so on.
Yeah, I really relate in many ways to what Jenny was talking about. Obviously, the experience isn't so direct in local government as it is with being a medical professional. You're not faced with somebody immediately having that decision, but what we are faced with in local authorities, especially where I am in a borough in East London and across the country too, it's about making the decision between what you can fund and what you can't based on the scarce resources that you have. And every year we have to set a budget that is balanced and that covers our statutory responsibilities and duties. But we know, we in the Labour Party, we know that across the country, we don't have all of the resources that we need. We don't have the funding. We don't have the capacity. We don't have enough people in the trained workforce, be it, you know, adult social care, other frontline services like youth services or even sanitation. And you know, the bin collections, it comes down to the very granular as well. We don't have it. And so we're forced to make often quite tough decisions between what will have the least negative impact, particularly following the pandemic, whereby many frontline services that are funded by local government, either directly or indirectly, have been on the front line and have sort of suffered the brunt of having to contend with stopping the spread and keeping people alive. We're having to make decisions in light of that because the government hasn't met the cost of it in full. And that does have knock-on effects. So I deliberately, when it comes to setting the budget every year and our involvement in that as councillors, try not to look at what we're doing as good or evil. Otherwise, you'll be wholly consumed by horrible feelings. Wholly consumed by guilt even, because at some point you have to vote for something that you don't really agree with. But if we don't pass that budget, the entire council suffers and there is therefore more pain. And I think actually, sort of coming back to what we're talking about with regards to free will and choosing that path, and again reflecting on what Jenny's just said, because it's really sat with me, something that I think Judaism implores us to do is to always make a choice rather than foregoing making that choice because it's easier not to, and leaving it to somebody else or kicking the can down the road, if you like. We're taught that we have to make that decision because it's better to do so than to create a larger problem for somebody else or to create a bigger problem out of a smaller problem. And that's something that we do on the political side in local government. We have to make that decision every single year and stand by it and be able to prove that it's for the greater good.
Thanks very much, Joshua. And it's fascinating to have these different contexts coming out. Peritine, let me come to you and if you'd like to add something from your experience to this.
So as someone who is currently in higher education and back in academia, especially on the later end of my 20s, I've, and perhaps because I'm a lot more jaded than I was when I was younger, I feel that there is a bit of a push nowadays, especially from the left, and I am left wing and I'm involved in a lot of activism spaces, and I find it difficult to reconcile my sense of right and wrong and sense of my understanding of free will within these spaces, because I do think there is this tendency to intellectualize the human experience, and it's removing the, ironically, it's quite ironic when it comes from leftist spaces, which are so focused on, you would think, community and people and the human experience. But I think in some ways that this humanity has been removed to a certain degree, that sometimes I think that lacks room for nuance. And I think it's particularly relevant for Jewish people, and the conversations I've had while on my journey and also with Jewish people within my intimate circle, that there is a struggle between, particularly in politics and in activism and social justice, not compromising your fundamental beliefs and not compromising Jewish identity and Jewish cultural customs. I don't know if anybody else wants to expand on that.
Thanks, Pera. We'll come on to this, I think, because you've touched on perhaps one of those key words, which is, where do we make compromises? How do we make them? Peter, some brief thoughts from yourself, please.
Yeah. As I said to begin with, my background was in education and academic theology, but I left that. I actually took early retirement and became a much more freer person as a result. And I've spent the last, 5 years at least, looking after my elderly parents-in-law, and at the moment my 90-year-old father-in-law. And there were challenges because I had come from quite a rarefied setting, if you like, and doing different sort of experiences to what I have to do now. So there were challenges there, but those challenges were challenges that led me to learn an awful lot about, not just about myself, but also about, in a sense, Judaism as well. Particularly this idea of tikkun olam, this idea of, even in a small way, of repairing the world. In my own small world now, as it were, I'm hopefully making things better and well for my father-in-law, and my wife helps. But we've lived through a COVID pandemic. We've lived through a family tragedy fairly recently. And we continue to try and find ways of experiencing an authentic way of living, both for him and for ourselves. And some things have come through, particularly the sense of humility of doing tasks you wouldn't think of doing, but you do them. I won't go into the details of them, I'm sure you can imagine. But also humour, so much humour now. Even in darkness, we were still able to smile and joke. In the last few weeks, when my mother-in-law died, I was able to sit down and talk with George, my father-in-law, and we spent, well, days really, talking about their lives together and the things they did. And I learned from that as well. I learned that experience of loss and experience of life isn't unique to yourself, to myself. It's something that exists amongst all of us. And it's something that I've learned from. And the fact I've been doing the course, the Judaism Access course at the same time, has enabled me to reflect on that in ways I didn't think would be possible. I've been able to think about why things matter to me and to others, and why I'm willing to help in the ways I do, and continue seeking and searching.
Thank you, Peter. And that's a lesson from the University of Life, I think, isn't it? Amanda, different experience again, different settings.
Yeah, totally different setting. And I didn't actually introduce what I did at the beginning or my age. Peter, I'm definitely kind of a little bit more with you, kind of pushing 50 in a year's time. So I'm feeling really old hearing how old everybody said they was at the start. But yeah, so my job's really different actually to what everyone else has spoke about. And this is the point in any conversation where I always start to question, why am I here? Why is my point of view relevant when I work in a corporate world? What I do in my job is I moderate qualitative interviews. I do quite a lot of ethnographic research and depth. And my kind of role as a researcher and an ethnographer is to remain objective and not to steer a conversation. So I have found myself in countless situations where instinctively I really disagree with somebody, but I absolutely outwardly cannot do so. I have to sit in that room and be with them and just listen to them play out their decisions and their thinking. And sometimes it's quite difficult. That's my job. And then sometimes I have to get into the skin of why people are choosing kind of one situation or one kind of option over another. And I have to really sort of get into the skin of, are they being honest? Or are they applying a lens to this that's unrealistic to their actual lives? So in this setting, are they just choosing something that they really want, not the option actually that is closest to their reality and their everyday lives? But kind of touching on the moral code aspect that you kind of referenced after, and Jenny had been speaking, Rabbi Richard, that's something that I actually quite often find myself in situations where I'm in a situation and I want to help, but I can't. And there's one kind of example that always sticks with me. So there's one time when I was in Nairobi interviewing some women for an alcohol brand. But after the interview, you go out with them and they start to kind of pull down their mask a little bit. And they started telling me all these stories about what life was like as a woman in Kenya. And now relatively, they were doing quite well. But out came all these stories of the expectations that were placed upon them in job interview situations. And in order to secure a job, the things they were asked to do. And I was absolutely horrified. And clearly this sits in the realm of what is not acceptable. But in my role as researcher, I and my role there, I cannot do anything about it. So I had to place what made sense in that situation over what was felt right. It's like all I wanted to do was help them. All I wanted to do was something to make it right, but I couldn't. And morally, when I got home, it just really, really did not sit right at all. So I was very honest with the clients as to what I'd heard. And I encouraged them to consider championing women's rights causes. And they did start to take some action in this area. And then what that then led on to was kind of a bit more expertise in that kind of area. And that then led to a project for MTV Sugar, which is a TV series in Africa that's run as part of MTV's charitable platform, which is aimed at educating young men and women in Africa about practicing safe sex and targeting women to kind of understand the risks of getting involved with sugar daddies. So I could have walked away from that situation in Kenya and just parked and forgot it, but morally, it didn't sit right with me. I had to do something about it. And my instinct was to try and make things right in the way that I could once I got back home. That's just one example of kind of in my world and my work, talking to people from all sorts of different realms of life, the kind of situations that I can end up in.
Thank you, Amanda. And I love the fact that there is almost always, and I won't say always, but almost always, something we can do to address a situation. It may not wholly address it, it may not completely, but if you like, that comes back to that comment earlier about we have to make the choice, Jewishly, if you like, we have to make the choice. We have to make the choice, as Joshua was saying, to set the budget. You know, we may not want to, but we can't push the can down the road. Jenny has to make the choice about which patient to see. And that forcing to face up to the world as it is, as against how we would like it. And the way, Peritine, that goes back to your comment a couple of minutes ago about where do we square our idealism with the world that we're actually in, and how do we respond to those sorts of things. So it's very valuable hearing all these perspectives and comments, and I really appreciate it. Effie, I don't want to leave you out, so you're in a different setting again, and how does that play out for you?
Yeah, so the setting that I work in is residential, and I work with adults with learning disabilities and complex needs. So my job entails actually assessing that choice and that freedom that they have, whether or not they have the capacity to understand what is good and what is bad, and also to understand the freedom that we can take away from them. Which sometimes I morally it does grind on me to morally take something away from somebody. But then I have the other part of that spectrum of it being that this is for the safety of this person. Some of the people that we look after have very little mental capacity, and the choice that we have to make for them sometimes isn't beneficial for them, but it keeps them safe. And as somebody that has to rehabilitate somebody into the community, I have to take the factors in. Does this freedom that this person will have, that will it contribute to the community, or will it take away the freedom of choice? And for me, I've been doing this for nearly 13 years, and it changes all the time. What law states is a freedom of choice. And we have seen in the last 20 years, the best, it still could be a little bit better, rights for those with learning disabilities and complex needs. And coming through as a progressive Jew, you see that this beautiful thing that God has given us, this freedom to choose, And it's a wonderful thing that, you know, from the beginning of time, God has said, here is the choices that I give you, and here is your freedom to choose. And I find that very beautiful within the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve were given the choice to not eat the apple, but they did anyway. But God didn't severely punish them. God had said, I love you, but you've done wrong, and, you know, this needs to be repaid. And that's how I as a progressive Jew would see that, you know, we might do things wrong, but then there's a chain reaction that comes with that action that we've just done.
Thanks, Effie, and you've touched on some of the again those delicate balances of the individual as against society, and the general good as against the individual, and so on. So we've got so much there. As ever with these topics, we've got a situation where we could be talking for much, much longer, but we don't want to make these episodes go on ad infinitum or ad nauseum. I'm not sure which it is. I hope it's more ad infinitum than ad nauseum. I did ask you all to think about quotes from Jewish texts that you might have, and I just wonder if we might hear some of those, at least in terms of the kind of quotes that feel relevant, in the next minute or two, and then we'll move to our closing comments very quickly. So I think I was going to come to Peter perhaps first for something you'd chosen to highlight.
Yes, thanks. What I've done is I've chosen just part of a section in the Siddur. There's a verse that comes from the creation story. It's a very simple one. And God saw the whole creation, and it was very good. Now, that sounds like a very simple thing, in a way, to say. But the reality is, of course, that as with words and their meanings, metaphors can bring us into different territory. So the whole of creation, the whole of everything being good, has to be taken literally. It has to be taken as indicating that not just what we ourselves think is good, but all the experiences we go through is actually good. And that includes the darkness as well as the light. And I think that that's a really important point to make. The poet Sean O'Casey once said, we cannot always suffer ecstasy, which I think is a wonderful line. And I think it captures that essence that, yeah, there's light and darkness, but in the end, it is all good.
Thank you, Peter. That's a challenging thought there. Amanda, what would you contribute?
Sorry, couldn't unmute there. So that the line I chose was, like animals, human beings eat and drink, procreate, secrete and die. Like angels, they stand erect, speak, think and see visions. And I know, although commonly this is thought to represent the kind of two-stage creation and the notion of the soul being good and the physical body evil, what I like about it is that it speaks to the duality. There's us and there's our act of thinking, to question and to be able to consider others. And we're so much more than a person, and it sort of suggests that we're connected to something bigger, and our actions and our choices will impact others, which is very much what we were all talking about when we were giving the examples to the previous question.
Thank you. Thanks, Amanda. And Effie, coming to you now, and then I'll go to Parity next.
Yeah, the passage that I found from the Siddur is quite touching, and it says, alone among God's creatures, it would seem we have been given the freedom to choose good or evil. The freedom is both our glory and our burden, for our choices have consequences. And for me, that resonates with the mantra that I use every day, and I set it on my phone, and it's always build upon an ARC. And the ARC acronym actually stands for acts of random kindness, because the choices that we say or not say, or what we do and what we don't do, will always have an effect on others as well as ourselves. And I find that very interesting, that, you know, to act upon an act of random kindness could actually might save someone's life.
Thanks, Effie. Perrottine, did you find a text and idea to focus on?
I did. So, if I create human beings, said God, wicked persons will spring from them. But if I do not create them, how shall righteous persons spring from them? That really speaks to me, because I think, you know, it's basically just saying that without the bad, there isn't good. You need, and I sort of interpret it to mean that without bad, there is no good. I think the wickedness makes being good all the more rewarding, because you have the choice not to be, and you have to choose to do good. Yeah.
Thanks indeed. Yes. I think that, just as we said with dark and light, if you don't have the contrast, everything ends up pale grey and there's no distinction, is there? So we do need those contrasts. Jenny, how about you? And then I'll come to Joshua finally.
So the sentence I chose was, we should all have two pockets so that we can reach into one or the other according to our need. In our right pocket, there should be a piece of paper saying, for my sake was the world created. And in the left, I am but dust and ashes. This really spoke to me. I think it's mostly because one day I'll be on a ward round and all the patients will be doing really well. I've managed them all really appropriately and everyone seems to be getting better and I'm on top of the world. I no longer need senior help. I know everything. And then the next day I'll get back on the ward and they've all suddenly deteriorated. I need so much help and I can't do anything on my own. I can't even put a cannula in right. And it's really to just help me, bring me back down to earth, and also pull me back up when I'm at my worst. And I think that's why it really spoke to me.
Thank you, Jenny. I can imagine in those sort of ward settings, those feelings. Joshua, coming to you.
Like every good traditionalist, I've gone all the way to creation, to Genesis for my passage. And I've gone with Vayetzer Hashem Elohim et Adam, which translates as and God formed man, or created the human being as we translate it today, because there is a Talmudic interpretation of the spelling of Vayetzer with the two yuds, and it is said by some that the two yuds represent the Yetzirah and the Yetzir Tov, and the Yetzir Tov, something that we hope to all embody, is the moral conscious. And it is the impulse that leads us to make good decisions and do the right thing and choose that path. And the Yetzirah is the selfish impulse. It's the impulse potentially to do bad, but not necessarily, because it isn't intrinsically evil. It's what leads us to make decisions where we center ourselves, which sometimes is necessary. But as long as the Yetzirah Tov keeps the Yetzirah in check, then we can make sure we're always making the right decisions and doing right by ourselves and by others.
Thank you, Joshua. That's a lovely teaching indeed. And where I found myself with this theme is a reminder of the, if you like, the nature of human nature. And the final paragraph of this theme really gives some insight into that. And I wonder if I might ask you to share in reading it section by section, starting perhaps with Perrottine to begin with the first sentence or so.
When we do something which shows some moral weakness, the act is frequently condoned by the comment, it is human. The use of human in such contexts has given it a connotation of weakness.
And moving on to Jenny.
It is human to err. It is human to satisfy the desire of the flesh, even when it can be done only by ignoring the best moral standards. It is human to obey instincts which inhere in our humanity. It is human to yield to temptations.
Effie, if you would read.
But there is another side to our nature. It is not only human to be weak, but it is also human to have a touch of the divine. It is not only human to feel temptation, but it is also human to resist.
And I'm going to ask perhaps if Peter would be happy to take us through to the end.
Every day, men and women make sacrifices. By the power of the Spirit, they overcome the force of mere instincts. Their victory is a triumph of the human over the human. It is human to be weak. It is also human to be strong.
Thank you, Peter, for reading. I'm sorry I couldn't get all your voices back in at the end there. But I want to thank each and every one of you for your contributions to our discussion. And I hope that all our listeners have gained as much from it as I have listening to you contributing. And I always come away with the feeling that I've got to listen back to this conversation to get some more value from it now it's happened. So thank you all very much. And I wish you well. And I will look forward to seeing you very soon. My thanks on everyone's behalf go to our guests this week, Dr. Jenny Ellenbogen, Peter Calve, Counselor Joshua Garfield, Amanda Herbert, Peratine Zita, and Ephraim Hazan. Our thanks also to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism, and Lehrbeck College for supporting Progressively Jewish, and to you, our listeners, for making this effort worthwhile. Please do send us your questions so that we can build future episodes on your interests, your concerns, and your feedback. Do leave a comment with your podcast provider or send an email to progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to Progressively Jewish and encourage your friends to do the same. In next week's episode, my friend and colleague, Rabbi Tanya Saknovich, we'll be discussing education with her guests linked to the Parsha of Vayelech.